Imagine you woke up this morning and your business just vanished. Welcome to Survival Mode, a podcast that explores how entrepreneurs handle hard decisions in times of crisis. I'm Matthias, and together with Digital Switzerland, we explore what it means to have a hard pivot, go through rapid scaling, or put your startup into hibernation mode.
How do you sell if you cannot see your customer? In this episode of Survival Mode, Manuel Hartmann, CEO and founder of Sales Playbook, elaborates how the crisis is affecting sales cycles, how remote sales works, even in Switzerland, and what is yet to come beyond COVID-19. Sales Playbook helps Swiss B2B startups to scale and hit their product market fit faster.
Welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode. I have the absolute pleasure to be here with Manuel Hartmann from Sales Playbook. Manuel, could you quickly introduce yourself? What are you about? What are you doing?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Matthias. I founded Sales Playbook to help B2B startups, especially in Switzerland, to hit product market fit and accelerate the sales fast without hiring external sales reps, at least not doing so too early. I founded the company 15 months ago. So far, I've worked with 60 plus customers. And yeah, looking forward to this chat.
Awesome. So I think sales is quite a big topic, but I'm interested to hear from you. So we went through this impact, this crisis based on COVID. How did it shape up the whole landscape? How did it shape up your business?
I'll try to answer landscape first and then for my business. I think for landscape, it's just brought tremendous uncertainty. So there's volatility, uncertainty, and confusion and so on people have. That hit especially startups hard because it's as such a very volatile business. It also shook the investment landscape. So startups that were close to close the funding round had some uncertainty around that. Some funding rounds dropped. So runway shortened. On customer side, it's a hard thing for startups because many corporates had an investment freeze for anything non-essential, non-core business. I think we've seen quite an impact. What startups really work towards tackling a core problem of a business, and what was a nice to have kind of innovation theater thing. So that is overall input on my personal business. It validated that the model can work completely remote, completely digital. So I started building the Sales Playbook platform before. It was actually a good thing to have that pressure to validate the business model and move to more of a subscription model nearly, like with like monthly payments and not forcing startups to pay four-digit amounts at once, but having three-digit amounts mainly, or very low four-digit amounts per month, and work towards a more continuous collaboration model.
Very cool. So do you think that overall it got more competitive? So I think, as you say, there was investment freezes in the landscape. Did you see a trend for increase as well? Like, were there any startups that all of a sudden had the time of their life?
Yeah, indeed. Like things such as food e-commerce, which struggled at the 2-3% mark for decades, probably, or at least years. I heard farming got like 300% revenue increase at times. So did many others. Anything connected to like remote learning collaboration, like Zoom stock rose by like 300%. I think companies like MaxBrain, for example, anything like e-learning related did really, really well. So it was also very industry specific and how fast you were able to make things happen to solve problems for customers as a startup.
We had a lot of startups in the, as you mentioned, ed tech, e-commerce, digital health areas. For them, all of a sudden, you had this massive increase or this massive increase in sales, and all of a sudden it worked. Before it was it's quite a B2B driven sales model, but yeah, they had rough gatekeepers that made it harder for them to enter the market. And with Corona, with the impact, with the crisis, a lot of that accelerated. How do you make sense out of that? Or what's your opinion on that?
I mean, there's no magical things. There's no physical law like an apple falling to the floor from a tree, like gravitation, that makes sales cycles months, if not years, sometimes in B2B deals. So I heard it from an edtech startup that sales cycles went down from 5 months to 5 weeks, sometimes 5 days for five-digit amounts. I mean, imagine basically having an inbound lead, somebody calling up like, hey, we're doing further education. You seem to provide it digitally. Can we make it happen? What do you need from us? Like, well, signature, like, cool. 20 to 50K, pretty much. So this is stuff like if people need it and they understand their need and you get the people to the table that you need to take a decision on it and implement it and have other people ready, like finance, procurement, legal, IT, these typical influencer functions, things can happen very quickly.
So it's interesting, right? I mean, back in the day or before, these deals always took a lot of time, especially because of many people involved. Now you've seen it actually is possible. If the need is there, it is possible to do it quite quick.
Yeah.
How can you use that in the future? Or how can you, I mean, it's shown it happens. So what can we learn out of that?
Do case studies. Like American elite universities like Harvard do this case study method for decades already. And like, take these as case studies and see what was true for that to work within like weeks instead of months or quarters or years. And you figure out like, okay, the need was there, the timing was there, like everybody understood it. How can we replicate it in the future to make it clearer that the benefit can be immediate? Like, which people were at the table? How did the discussion go? How did we prepare? How did you answer? How's the deal playing out in the future as well? How can we make it sustainable? Or are people just using that? And now that everybody's back to school, is it like, why was a good trial? And now everybody after 3 months is going to physical learning and giving back the subscription.
That's an interesting topic there. How can you create it as a sustainable solution? Because I think not too many of these hits will happen. I mean, it was quite extraordinary. You haven't seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
Perfect. Another topic I wanted to address, and we touched it briefly before, is sales as a topic in the Swiss market. So as people who know Swiss people, they normally quite humble and don't over exaggerate or sell themselves too often. How do you see this issue?
Yeah, it's still such a big cultural issue in our landscape, I think. And Nicholas Berg, who himself founded 10+ startups, built up Red Alpine Ventures, like Brock Singh to Switzerland, just did a session at the Startup Sales Summit last week on why people fear or even hate sales. Another sales coach actually said once that a lot of established salespeople, not tech founders in Switzerland, they prefer taking a cold shower for half an hour to doing cold calling for half an hour, which is just this cultural fear of rejection that people prefer to not do anything instead of getting rejected, combined with that sales has such a negative image in Switzerland that people are afraid that their parents are not going to visit them at their birthday or so anymore. And that needs to change because there's a lot of great products in Switzerland compared to North America, for example, but North America wins in some cases because they're just clearer about how it can deliver value, about the professionalism, but they're not even so much louder, but they're more to the point on embracing selling as solving problems for customers, making it clear how they do so.
It's amazing. I mean, if you look at the Swiss landscape and if you look at the statistics like the World Intellectual Property Organizations, who put Switzerland on the map as the most innovative country over and over again, it's fascinating. Or under all then, if you look, I think we're great in innovation, invention or tech, but the commercialization is always a little bit a challenge.
Yeah, it is indeed. And I think we won that WIPO award for the world's most innovative country for 10 times in a row. I mean, imagine that as a country of 8 million. And just yesterday I read on LinkedIn that EPFL and ETH are number 6 and number 14 tech university in the world. So it's not that we cannot build great products and do great science and have like good university systems. So it's all there. It's not that we're not bad human beings in terms of like doing business. Like we have SMI Corp, we have so many multinational companies in Switzerland, like ABB, CS, Nestle, Transocean, so many more, right? Disproportionately to it. But bridging the gap from science and tech to building a valid company out of it seems to be really hard for people.
Yeah, making it known as well. I mean, I think that in the tech landscape is quite interesting. So Switzerland, to some extent, it's known, but they had some expertise or some touch, or they just know Switzerland. And for a lot of them, it's still kind of a black box. So it's,
yeah.
If you look at the size and the startups that are produced, we're still on awareness level, we're not top notch now. If you combine it to Israel or some other bigger hubs in that sector.
Yeah, I think Israel has like roughly the same population, but three times as many startups. And I'm talking deep tech startups as cybersecurity, machine learning, and these kind of topics, right? The thing is just like Swiss people are really good, like Swiss researchers, they stay within this research and apply for Horizon 2020 Grant 2.0 and InnoSwiss and all the stuff, which is great. No objections to that, but bridging the gap to making a startup in terms of is a business model looking for a company, bridging that gap is mostly doing market validation and building up sales.
I agree. So what advice would you give to Swiss startups to change that, to make sales a top-class skill of the Swiss landscape and ecosystem?
First of all, embrace it as a mindset. I mean, it's startups that sell are startups that scale. It's so much easier for everything, for fundraising, for hiring, for finding customers, for keeping talent, by the way. Like, it's very hard to retain people if you do zero sales and everybody knows the cash flow chart. Like, people are really tempted to go other ways. And embrace the mindset and then get any resources you can to learn what you can. I mean, you can either read the 30 sales books as I did and like fail or win sometimes at Tesla on the street, at Accenture, like a machine learning startup before, and spending 50, 60 hours a week just on that topic, like very focused, right? Or you can get the external support from, if you committed enough, from YouTube videos, which few people are. You can get it from an expensive sales trainer, but who doesn't know startups and tech. You can bring in junior resources, which are available for anything, but not capable of many things sales because it's not teached in Switzerland. You can try to bring in an external VP sales who is experienced, but rarely hungry and hands-on. I mean, if you can get all of these like without the downsides, like do it for all means, or you can work with people who are in that field at this intersection of startups and B2B sales.
Correct. What is your opinion on, we've seen a lot of Swiss startups or deep tech startups, especially if they go to the US, what they usually do is setting up marketing and sales on that side. Is that a model you would push for, or what's your opinion on that?
It depends on your business model. And that there's in Switzerland famous case studies such as Ava, who went global first, US first after a while. But that was basically shipping over Leia to Swissnex, having local support in Boston, in San Francisco, building up a local team and really embracing it. So if you want to do it, great, but commit to it. Like send over a founder or two founders over there, get the support network, hire people on the ground and get into the ecosystem. Just basically having a freelance sales rep or so, commission only in the US, like is, well, not good.
not advisable. Perfect. So one last question before I move forward on this topic. We talked a bit about remote or the whole digital sales since we couldn't meet or the crisis made it impossible to fly and to travel. And sales to some extent, right? We always say it's people business. It really, it's super crucial, the personal relationship and contact. So all of a sudden we couldn't do that. What happened?
I think it forced people to think about what they do and why they do it. So a lot of salespeople, I just talked to Vakal Schweitz, I think last week, and they even say like, hey, there's still a lot of salespeople. Let's just get in the car and go to St. Gallen or go to Urio, go to Basel or any canton and just get into the car to drink coffee. And sometimes there's a sale, sometimes there's not. But there's little process and like quantified learning behind it so that this stopped immediately. So people are asking like, okay, if I cannot get into my car and just visit clients, what am I going to do? I need to establish something like a process. I need to figure out what my sales channels are. How do I generate leads? What works, what doesn't? Do I build a discovery script? Do I focus on segment X versus the segment Y, which is profitable? And to figure out how to build trust and empathy and relations without seeing people physically. So a lot of people used video calls for the first time in their life, which is good. Still very few people use tools such as Loom, Vidyard, Soapbox, use whichever you like. I like Loom best to do video follow-ups. Like when you send an email, just don't send like text and a huge PowerPoint or whatever, like a huge PDF old school offer, but send a 2-minute video just like embedded as a GIF in the email, like just multiplies your reply rate.
So cool tools. Moving forward now, what do you would say changes, or what do you hope for that changes? So we had this one thing that we move more in the digital space. Do you think we all of a sudden jump back as soon as you're allowed to travel and go back to business as usual? Or will there be a substantial change?
On the professional side, I'm convinced there will be a professionalized sales approach in Switzerland, because people need to step up their game, and the ones that don't will go extinct, or at least become less profitable, less growing. On a personal side, as well on the business side, I mean, it's human beings among interacting in the end. People think harder about why are you doing something physically compared to digitally? Like, why am I boarding a train and taking 1 to 5 hours of travel time for a 1-hour meeting? Is it worth it? And it's completely fine to answer the question with yes, just people holding back for a second, like, do I really need the physical meeting? And again, as well, do I need this 2-hour meeting instead of, can it be a 30-minute call? Can it be a very simple email? Can it be a WhatsApp voice message? So people think more in options than before.
That's super interesting. I had that on the last podcast with Tobias from Sherpany, and he mentioned as well, I hope it goes more to an empowerment of the people.
Yeah.
Or the employee, that they can choose what makes the most sense or what's the most productive in that perspective.
Yeah.
On the other hand, people always like to travel. So do you think this is coming back?
I think it will definitely come back. It will just be more selective, right? I just found Cedric Walburger's like videos on LinkedIn, some of the best I've seen in Switzerland, by the way. And he traveled like, I think, 200 days per year. And it's like, am I missing travel? Definitely not the 200 days at an airport just to fly over for a board meeting in San Francisco. Will I travel again? Yes, definitely. Let's go like to another country. Let's learn a new language. Let's learn about people and culture. But that's a conscious decision, and these travel resources will go to more conscious time spent towards a certain purpose.
That's super cool. So, I mean, if I look at that a little bit, it's something similar to sales than marketing was before. It went online, it went trackable to some extent, right? It was not a fluffy business, but you put some sponsoring, you put some ads on, and you had some return. But online made it really trackable and traceable. So you think something similar happens to sales, or is it already happening?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, let's take the example of Startup Sales Summit, which we did for the first time like week before last week now. And having that event physically would have been great indeed. But just regarding the data and the quantified results, which you say, like, we could exactly see, like, okay, in minute 40, so after the formal part, people dropped or people increased. How many people were in each session? Because we had 250 plus registration for the 8 sessions overall. But we noticed that there were anything from 25 to 90 participants per session. And we could do polls on people that are like, okay, how many newsletters do you find useful per week? 1, 5, 10. Like, what would you need to find it useful? So having all this quantified feedback within the session and then doing a follow-up poll for people who want to get the presentation, like 30 plus people signing up and filling out like a quick feedback. What is the most interesting topic for you? Where should we continue? So it gives you really great data at scale that stays with you and that you can learn from.
Quick personal question there. Do you miss it? Do you miss the personal contact, or how is it for you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I spent 4 weeks in Brazil, and that was like a good fit culture-wise. Like, hey, do the whim, que legal, let's go to the club, let's go have a beer or some. I do boxing, Thai boxing, which is a contact sport, which I love, which is not possible right now. So yes, definitely. I don't say like everything should be digital as such.
So we have to find a good balance there.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So last but not least, I would pick your brain a bit on what is going to happen moving forward, what's going to happen for the future. Always a tough topic, but what are your predictions? What do you think will happen beyond Corona, beyond this crisis, to the world, to us?
Yeah, predictions are difficult, especially about the future, right? So that's him for a Nobel Prize guy saying that, not me. I think one thing not everybody fully embraced yet is that financial crises happen from time to time in capitalism. I mean, it's the worst form of government, except of all the other ones that have been tried to say. But this stuff happens every 10 years plus minus. Like 2000, 2008, now it's 2020, just took like 50% longer. But I mean, we already seeing like 20, 30x higher Gesuche für Kurzarbeit in Switzerland than in the last financial crisis, which hit us. Stock markets are just still really, really high. And I think some people don't really get it that you need to do a must-have job and have like best a high income, industry independent, geography independent skill that's making you robust for what's to come. And if you don't have that yet, you probably do well to prepare for that to happen. Hmm. That's one prediction on the macro level. On the micro level, more on your specific business, I think you do well to really figure out and go deep to yourself, like what are really the must-have things which we do for companies? What's the 10x improvement compared to the status quo, which is triggering people to take a decision even during an economic crisis to change things, take that risk, like go through the process and the change management internally. It's always people to basically make it worth. And then on a startup level, I really hope that corporates get back on track to work with startups. Like they're not like these very classic, I just talked to an insurance guy before, like not as risk averse as they could be. And for startups to step up their game on improving not their pitching to investors, but how to make it clearer how they create operational value for businesses.
Awesome. So let's hope that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And a good point. Yeah, in retrospective, it's always easier to give predictions, and in big numbers as well, right? Then at least you should have a hit, or you will have a hit.
Yeah, exactly.
No, perfect. So, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for this talk, and hope I see you soon.
Definitely in person, if you like, as well.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Cool.